has changed from their perspective, but everything's changed from their goal structure, but everything's changed from their perspective about what's actually going to come up next. Because Trump actually does represent fundamental change, because you could not gaslight the American people into voting for their own destruction. Okay. They've almost did it to Germany. Even the Germans are beginning to say no to this. They're finally beginning to stand up for themselves. And what, of course, is the Germans, you know, the German establishment's next response, to try and ban the party that is the biggest vessel for this populist wave to say no.
Tom Luongo. Hi, excellent. How are you, my friend?
I breathe in and out. I repeat when I need to. And I am thankful that it's another day above the roses. Let's just leave it at that at this point.
That's a great way to say it. Great way. So last time I had you on, we were talking about a lot about the reset, Davos and everything. What are we talking about? A lot of stuff. But I really want to go revisit that. We had something pretty significant about 2 weeks ago, the U.S. I wanted to get your opinion on that. And if anything's changed, really, with the new administration coming in, the things he's putting together, does that change anything in the context of Davos and the Great Reset? Yes,
it does. So before the election, we had no idea what we were actually going to be in for, right? It was, you know, every other day I could flip a coin and I could come down on the side of, well, it's going to be Harris and a whole bunch of commies and they're going to destroy the world. And then we're all going to be bugs or, you know, move to non-extradition treaty countries or whatever it is. And, or it was going to be Donald Trump and he was going to win and he was going to start the process. And then the questions of course start, well, is Trump really going to be a reformer? Cause he didn't do anything the first time. That's all nonsense. Clearly, Trump is not the same guy he was in 2016. Clearly, he's got a team around him that is far more competent, far more energetic, and far less beholden to the pull of all of the corruption within the swamp. Okay, and the swamp is not just D.C. The swamp is everywhere. It's all over the place, and it's, I call the Davos crowd, it's the British remnant and everything else. I'm beginning to like morph that idea into what I'm calling evil corp central. Like you've got a group, it's a big corporation. It's got a bunch of verticals in it at this point.
Yeah.
And one of them is the old British remnant. One of them is, you know, the old colonialist powers of Europe, continental powers of Europe, nominally centered around the EU, what I like to call Davos. Then you have the old Trotskyites that are infested throughout all of those institutions. But they have a specific agenda. They're in the U.S. State Department, and they own the Congress, and they've got ties to AIPAC and yada, yada, yada. And there's crossover between all of these groups. They're all cross-pollinated within each other. So it's very, very difficult. But at the end of the day, you can honestly like bin them up into different verticals. They all have one plan in mind. They all want the same thing, which is destroy the United States and destroy Russia. Because from their perspective, those are the two potential imperial powers that, because of their vast natural resources and their vast geographic advantages, that they need to do away with. So it's, you know, from the British perspective, it's the whole geographic pivot of history, a la Halford Mackinder. Or Europe, it's always been that they don't have anything on the continent, so they have to go around the world to go get it from somebody else. And for the neocons, they're still butthurt that Stalin won and Trotsky got killed. Okay. Like, it, you know, when you, and I'm being reductionist about this in a certain sense, in order to try and not overly simplify things, but in order to make it clear what their differences are so that you can understand where their similarities lie and where these things meet, you know, they, why they want to achieve certain things and why Americans voted the way they did and why the British voted the way they did in 2016 and why we voted the way we did in 2016 as well. So once you understand that, then you can understand that they all agree on a particular set of circumstances to go forward with, i.e. destroy the U.S. They're split on Israel because that's where the tension between, say, the British remnant vertical and Davos comes in, because Israel is a British project about maintaining maritime sea lanes, whereas for the Europeans, they need access to Middle Eastern oil, and they want it stitched together with, and they want to be stitched into, they want the Middle East stitched into the EU so that they can bypass Russia. Okay. And that's what the JCPOA was all about. That's what all of the political instability in Israel is all about. It's been going on since Brexit. So they have overlap because, you know, there are a lot of Russian Jews in Israel, for example. So Russia is not necessarily interested in, for example, seeing Israel wiped off the map any more than the Americans are, any more than the British are. There's a lot of it. This is a very complex mess that if you only pull on one strand of, can all look like one particular narrative, right?
Right.
And the current one post October 7th is it's all the Jews, which is yet another British psyop for their own behind the scenes perfidy. So they put prominent Ukrainians with an axe to grind in charge of American foreign policy under Biden, the Vindmans and the Newlands and the Antony Blinkens and whatnot. And then we have the culmination of a 30-year plan to radicalize Ukraine in order to throw it up against the Russian Empire, against the Russian Federation, in order to try and break it apart. They were never going to be deterred by this. So their goals have not changed. They want a more perfect technocratic union in Europe. They want, the Europeans want to destroy the British for daring to be, they have history. The French and the British don't like each other. Let's not kid ourselves. Neither do the Germans and the British. So if the EU is a French and German project, the UK was never going to be, it was always fundamentally, we're going to bring the UK in order to destroy it, to strip mine it and destroy it. And by doing so, consolidate power and take their power that they have over the Middle East and other places, India, Hong Kong, blah, 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 the gateways to all the other places that the British Empire used to have, and destroy them. So in that respect, Davos, for example, and the American sovereignists that I've identified were not a part of Evil Corp Central. They actually have an overlap in their Venn diagram, right? But at the same time, it's like, what's their priority? So the goal here is they're all on the same page about what the intermediate goal is. What they're not on the same page about is who gets to rule afterwards. Right. So the British want to rule afterwards from behind the shadows. The EU wants to openly rule the world through post-World War II institutions, the EU and central bank digital currencies and everything else. This is not to say that the British don't want this, but the British want to be able to control the currency. They want to be able to control from the shadows the same way they've been controlling things going back hundreds of years. I like to start this period of history at the formation of the Bank of England in 1694, simply for the layman to have a pointer to a discontinuous moment in time when the world started to shift. Okay. And we got kind of 300-year period of history, which has its own kind of cyclic a component to it, right? There's a 300-year solar cycle, for example. There's a, if you use Martin Armstrong's 8.6-year cycle, then there's use his cycles, it comes out roughly 340 years. There's a chondrity of cycles. There's all these cycles. They all come roughly down to this period in time from the formation of the Bank of England, plus or minus a few years. It's a rough analysis. And I do believe in that kind of cyclic analysis because I do believe that, human beings go through waves of psychological, expansion and trauma. Like they go through, it's just trauma and liberation over and over and over again. So, and then, the question is whether or not those things are escalating in a big, there's cycles within cycles within cycles, blah, 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 blah. Okay. Right. So to not get off the point. So nothing has changed from their perspective, but everything's changed from their goal structure, but everything's changed from their perspective about what's actually going to come up next. Because Trump actually does represent fundamental change, because you could not gaslight the American people into voting for their own destruction. Okay. They've almost did it to Germany. Even the Germans are beginning to say no to this. They're finally beginning to stand up for themselves. And what, of course, is the Germans, you know, the German establishment's next response to try and ban the party that is the biggest vessel for this populist wave to say, no, we're not going to commit cultural harry cultural harikiri over our shame over World War II. The younger generations of Germans are just not down with that anymore. The thing they tried to leverage in the same similar respect here in the United States was to leverage the shame of Gen Xers and millennials for the Americans, for America turning into an empire.
Right.
Same kind of thing. And they really tried to play that card with us. That's where all the race baiting and the, you know, fuck white people stuff and all that shit comes from. So that was their psychological plan. That was their, you know, if you really think about it. So they had a two-pronged assault. It was not quite the same thing. The Germans, they used the shame of World War II. Us, they've used the shame of the people who wake up to, you know, the real evil of the American government. They immediately then get disillusioned and then turn around and become enemies of the American government, as opposed to seeing that was also an operation. It was an operation to destroy the country. And this is, you know, and believe me, I used to be one of those people. You talked to me 15 years ago and you would hear a much different set of, you know, parameters coming out of my mouth. My position would look a lot more like a lot of the doctrinaire libertarians, which I've now, you know, broken with on these issues, because they're still stuck in that same mindset. Right. By refusing to admit that America isn't just evil, they have become, they've become honestly kind of sycophants for Russia and or China and in their commentary. And it's quite sad. Or they've taken themselves off the game board completely and just say, well, you know, it's not good enough. Nothing's good enough. So, and they're the ones out there screaming today that, you know, Trump's foreign policy picks within his cabinet. I'm getting to that one here in a second. They're the ones out there screaming that nothing is going to change with Trump's foreign policy because his cabinet's full of Zionists. That's not true. Go down Trump's list, go down Trump's cabinet this time, and you'll see very few people who are of that particular extraction that supposedly we're all supposed to be angry with right now.
I do want to get to that too. Go ahead.
I don't want to make a big point about this because it's one of those things we're not supposed to be able to talk about still.
Right.
We can talk about it now in a much more constructive manner and say, look, we have, you have a lot of evidence here that what's going on is a generational shift in his cabinet. Excuse me. Let's look at Marco Rubio, probably the most controversial of all the picks, from a foreign policy perspective, Secretary of State. Now, Marco Rubio has what I like to call a Manila envelope quotient, or an MEQ, that is very, very high. I mean, he's owned by a lot of people. There are a lot of people who have a lot of photos of Marco Rubio doing things that Marco Rubio would rather not see the light of day. And therefore, you know, Marco is like John McCain used to be. He wakes up every other morning and he's not sure who he's supposed to work for today because he works for everybody.
Right.
So now, with that said, you know, Rubio said a lot of things in the past that, you know, you shouldn't discount. But at the same time, you know, is he really that rabidly pro-Israel in the same way that someone like Anthony Blinken or John Bolton is? No, I don't think so. Clearly, Marco was chosen for a variety of more subtle strategic reasons. And he's clearly signaling to the world that's listening, not to the people on Twitter, that U.S. foreign policy is shifting away from Asia and towards Latin America, that we're creating a silo here on the North and South America in the Western Hemisphere, which is something that, you know, sovereigntists of even a, you know, a distinctly conservative but not libertarian perspective have been screaming about for years. Why aren't we shoring up our position and our relationships in our own continent? It makes no sense. Why are we continuing to antagonize China, get ourselves involved in Central Asia, you know, screwing around in the Middle East and antagonizing Russia? It doesn't make any sense. And right. So let's just look at it that way. Does anybody really believe that Donald Trump doesn't understand any of this? Now, Donald Trump is very pro-Israel. He is.
Right.
But at the same time, like, that doesn't mean he's going to hand them the entire Middle East. There's not enough Israel. I was talking to Dexter White about this yesterday on the phone. He said, does anybody notice that, you know, there's not that many Israelis? So this whole Greater Israel project, you see these maps of Greater Israel, like, and you're like, where are they going to put these people? How are they going to populate that area? That's all land that Israel's going to conquer by people who, and they're going to conquer these people who absolutely hate them. Like, right. Ask yourselves, it's the same argument. It's the same dumb argument that people, especially of the European Union variety, invoke whenever they start talking about Russia wanting to reinvade and, you know, all of Eastern Europe. Like, nobody in Eastern Europe likes the Russians. They hated being occupied by them during the Cold War. Poles have literally committed almost national suicide over their Russophobia. They've been so easy to manipulate in a geopolitical sense. Most Ukrainians east of the Dnieper River hate Russians. Mm-hmm. Why would the Russians want to conquer these people? Yeah. Like, it's nothing but a bureaucratic and it's nothing but a nightmare for them. It's an administrative nightmare. It's dumb. Yeah. Same thing with East Germans. Same thing with Hungarians. Same thing with Bulgarians. Same thing with Romanians. Same thing with all the Czechs and the Slavs and, you know, everybody, the Serbs and all of them, the Croatians, all of them. None of them want to be ruled by Russians. And the Russians don't have the manpower, the capital, the logistics, or anything in order to any of the things necessary to be able to do that anyway. So it's all nonsense. It's the same thing with the Israelis. They don't have that power. Right. Hell, the Americans don't have that power. Clearly, we've tried for the last 35 years and it's not worth a damn. All it's done is bankrupt us. So then when you look at all of this data and you look at all of these things from that perspective, you ask yourself, well, why did we engage in that behavior in the first place? Clearly, it's because they're a bunch of crazy Zionists. No. It could also be that the people we put that we thought were on our, that were Americans working for America, were never working for America in the first place. And they were just vandals, or as I like to put it now, Trotskyites, who absolutely desperately wanted to destroy the United States in order to, and use that power to throw it at Russia because they're still butthurt again over Stalin, you know, killing Trotsky and throwing them out of Russia 75 years ago or 80 years ago, whatever it was. Like, this is, never underestimate this. Never underestimate these people and their seething hatred of everybody who's not them. They are true believers. People like Anthony Blinken and Bill Kristol and Jennifer Rubin and all these people, Vindman, they're all true believers of this. They are truly Trotskyites, okay? And it's a point that we have to start really, that's the people we're not supposed to talk about.
Right.
Okay. It's not the Jews, folks. It's the Trotskyites. It's the people who were liberals in the 40s. Then they founded National Review and they became Republicans and they infested the Republican Party. And now, since Donald Trump has flipped the foreign policy front, that notice how all the classic neocons all backed who in this election? Yeah. Kamala Harris, Cheney, Liz Cheney.
Yeah.
All of them. Right.
Yeah.
John Bolton, all of them. None of them want Trump. Why? Because that's what they care about.
Yeah.
Okay. We elected, they ran Alexander Vindman, for Christ's sake, for Congress in Maryland in order to put his ass in the White in Congress when that guy should be, you know, that guy should be strapped to a bench in Guantanamo and being waterboarded and being offered the choice of Pellegrino or tap water. Okay. That's for what he's done. That guy's a traitor, and now he's going to be a member of Congress?
Right.
Seriously? Okay, but that's a different, but again, getting off point here. So what has changed? Everything has changed. Trump has set up a cabinet that is going to be far more interested in rooting out corruption, dismantling the managerial state that we have today, that is under the purview of the executive branch, and he's going to leave Congress to like play their classic reindeer games that they always play for 2 years and just like pass a budget and fuck off. I don't give a shit what you do, because it's not going to matter, because you're all just going to fight amongst yourselves. Meanwhile, my cabinet is going to go out there and go, I have this power as the executive to do this, gone, this, gone, that, gone, this, audited, this, done, this, and there's not a fucking thing you can do about it because you legislate and I implement. And it's up to me to decide how your laws are implemented. And if you attempt to legislate via executive, if you try to assume executive power via legislation, the Supreme Court has already knocked that dick in the dirt. Chevron, Jarkissi, this, that, and everything else. So it's over, folks. They've lost. So their only move on the board is the same thing I've been saying for 2 years now. Start World War III.
Today, right?
No, it hasn't started today. Good news, it hasn't started today, but it's dangerous and it's escalatory. It is dangerous and it's escalatory, but it's also within the purview of it's still not a red line that matters. And the red line that matters is that Russia's nuclear triad is not significantly degraded. If we attempt to attack anything like that, that's when the Russians are going to start lobbing nukes at London, Kiev, Brussels, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
Okay. Zoom is saying my connection is unstable. So if you lost any of that, I'll be happy to repeat it.
No, I got it. And it was a little unstable, but I think we got it all. But okay, so let me, I wish I was too engaged. I wasn't taking notes.
Don't worry about it.
So here, let's start with this first, because I was one of those at first that was very disappointed in the Rubio appointment.
I saw it.
Yeah. But I thought, is this actually a clever move? Because Rubio would be on a very short string, right? And be controlled.
Very tightly.
Right? He'd be controlled. And then they can put in, appoint a senator, whoever the hell they want.
Yeah. Went over this in a podcast. We went over the machinations very deeply in the Florida politics, by the way, because Florida politics, a lot of people don't understand the ins and outs of Florida politics because most people aren't Floridians, even though more of us are becoming Floridians by the day. And, you know, God's bless you. Come on in. The water's fine.
I would love to be in Florida. I'm just north of being in Georgia.
I'm so far north in Florida that I have friends and patrons who call you say, dude, you don't live in North Florida. You live in South Georgia. Well, it's just on the wrong side of the friggin', you know, the arbitrary border that doesn't matter. But that being said, and I know a lot of Floridians in this area that would take deep, deep offense to that. That's another thing. Let's not talk about the old Olusti gang. So, but the Florida politics are as follows. Andy, you're on the right track when it comes to that. Look, you've got Gates as AG from Florida. You've got Rubio, senator from Florida, moving up to Secretary of State. Now no longer is Marco is going to be in charge of a much different organization, and he's not going to be one vote that can be used to swing legislation. We can now create, we can get a squishy Republican owned with a very high MEQ, right? Mm-hmm. And we can replace them with a Floridian with a much lower MEQ. Okay. Now, it could be Matt Gaetz if the Senate refuses to confirm him. Because if you don't think that that's not going to be the absolute spite move, I don't know what would be. And this is Donald Trump, and this would be Ron DeSantis. And, you know, no matter how much bad blood there may be between DeSantis and Trump over the primary season, reality is that, you know, that's not going to, that would be done in the extreme, right? So it's a hammer and anvil play. You can either deal with Matt Gaetz in the Senate for 2 years before the election, where he then wins by 14 points for another 6 years, and then he's in the Senate, or you can deal with him as AG. Your choice. This is a shit sandwich. You get to take a bite. I'm not sure which, you know, you decide what side of the shit sandwich you want to take. You want to take the bite from. I'm leaving that choice up to you. I believe in the free market. So, or Gaetz is confirmed, and then to Dexter White's point, he thinks the odds-on favorite to fill Rubio's seat would be Ashley Moody, who's the current Attorney General of Florida. So either way, Moody winds up in one of two, either Moody, I think possibly Byron Donalds as well, but maybe not. We may want to keep Donalds as a safe vote in the House, right? Even though he's from a very safe district down in Naples. So you have, you know, one of them is going to be AG and the other one is going to be senator. And Ron DeSantis is not going to be a part of that calculus, because the blood between he and Trump as of right now is too bad for that to clear. But DeSantis is not stupid. He wants to win like everybody else, and he's not going to bend the knee to Don, but he doesn't need to. So he takes the AG, he promotes one of his people up into a position of extreme power, and Ron gets to finish out his term here in Florida, and then, you know, run against somebody in 2026, right? Or by the time for 2028 with the war chest that he'd be built up in 2024. It's fine. Now, and as a matter of fact, even as a quid pro quo for going along with all of this, it may be that DeSantis gets his turn as AG in 2026 and Gaetz moves on to something else.
Right? I thought about
it. We only need Matt Gaetz in there for 2 years to like destroy, take a wrecking ball to everything. All of that, when you start to think about the people that you're putting in charge of DNI, Tulsi Gabbard, RFK in charge of HHS and all of that, the CDC, all that stuff. Matt Gaetz is Attorney General, and others. Hegseth at Department of Defense. Again, maybe a rabid pro-Israeli, maybe a rabid dispensationalist Christian but at the same time, that's not what his job is going to be. His job is going to be cleaning up the Department of Defense. This is the role he's actually uniquely qualified for, or most qualified for. Okay. Go look at his resume beyond him appearing on Fox News, and you'll see exactly what we're talking about here. Get past all of the British propaganda, frankly, that everybody's falling for. Go look at the man's record and you'll see exactly what it is that he actually wants to do and what he's qualified for. Now, take all of that together, and what you have is a cabinet that does not care about legislation. It's going to be taking a wrecking ball to everything, exposing as many people as possible, and forcing them to their knee in front of Don Trump Leone.
They will.
Why wouldn't they? The political winds have shifted against them, and these people are so dirty. Why do you think they're screaming today? Why do you think Elizabeth Warren is out there today, quote tweeting her quote tweets over quote tweets over quote tweets, while she effectively live blogs their attempt to betray the country in the Senate on their way out the door? Why do you think she's doing that? She's doing that because my friend Caitlin Long knows that she's intimately involved, desperately, and from the ground up involved in both Operations Choke Point 1 and 2 for debanking people who were her political enemies. This woman could go to jail for treason. Okay? And they're all scared of that. So they're all going to front like they still have power. They're still counting votes in all the swing states to try and give the shit libs their copium and their dopamine hit to try and get them to rally around on January 6th against the Electoral College. And please do. Please show up at the Capitol on January 6th to have a real insurrection this time. Same thing with Adam Schiff and all the rest of them. Please do that. So then you'll all be in one place and you can actually go to jail for staging an insurrection, or you can have a peaceful protest and then you can go the fuck home.
Okay, so
your choice. I believe in the free market.
Yeah, right. So you got 2 months,
right?
Before inauguration.
Yep. Well, 6 weeks until the Electoral College.
Okay. 6 weeks. So you got 6 weeks. Do you think?
Your original question, this is not, your original question though is, has anything changed for Davos?
No.
They're starting World War III in Ukraine, and they are still trying to foment the civil war here in the United States. Do you understand what everything I just said leads to that conclusion? They have not changed. The Gantt chart of the Microsoft Project file, the Gantt chart over at Evil Corp Central is, we have to do these things on these dates because they have a flow chart. And that's what they're doing, and they're running that. And nothing's changed on their front, but we can see them. We know what they're doing. It's obvious, and all you have to do is not take the bait. And the proof in the pudding will be if Vladimir Putin and the Russians do not respond to last night's attack. We're doing this on Tuesday the 19th, last night's attack, in a way that is stepwise escalatory. If they don't do that, then what you'll see is a parallel aggression, a parallel move by the Russians. That who and what they hit will be the tell as to who they think was really behind the attack. The Americans, the French, the British, who, or all of them, or whatever. Like, if Putin understands that this is like one of the things that's bothering me this morning, and again, I'm going to like give full credit to Dexter White on this because he actually knows this stuff far better than I do. When we were talking about this literally up until the moment, you know, you and I started this call. And he was noting that the missiles that were fired are not, you know, we called them ATACMs. But Biden authorizes the use of ATACMs, but no one could actually corroborate that Biden actually gave that order. Then 2 days later, 3 days later, we get an ATACMs attack on, you know, Russia. Reported as ATACMs, but it's outright. But sadly, it's outside the range of the ATACMs that we know that we gave to Ukraine. So these ATACMs were quoted as having the same range as British Storm Shadow and Scout missiles. Now, though, regardless, Putin's not wrong when he says that he's not right when he says the Ukrainians couldn't fire these missiles. Yeah, they can. Like they can run the computers. Like that's not the problem. The Ukrainians aren't stupid. They know how to run computers. The of course the issue is, they need U.S. satellite guidance to pull it off. So Putin's right about that, but he's being a little mendacious when he says that the Ukrainians couldn't do this. No, they can't do it without help. But then what it was actually fired? Again, needs U.S. satellite help. So what are we dealing with here? Are we dealing with rogue elements within the Pentagon? Are we dealing with rogue elements within the intelligence community? Are we clearly dealing with, you know, a UK that is off the fucking deep end? Like Keir Starmer is off the deep end. Ursula von der Leyen is off the deep end at the EU. Like they're all gone. The Germans, Annalena Baerbock and Robert Habeck, they're all off the deep end trying to make this war real. But remember one thing, and this is why I don't think World War III has broken out quite just yet, is because we know there is a deep and relationship between Russian and American, relationship is the wrong word. We have a deconfliction hotline between that goes directly from the Pentagon to the Russian Ministry of Defense. We use it. It's an open line that's running in Syria. It's been running in Syria for 10 years. Okay. The idea that those guys are not talking right now, trying to get the Russians the real information about what actually happened is fanciful. So this is all up in the media space. This is all in the Twitter space. This is all to try and activate people and anxiety pimping people into overreacting. Because the goal here is twofold. Well, there's many goals here. But the goal here, the first goal is, of course, to as always, is to get the Russians to go on tilt, go offside, and do something that is escalatory and not justified. Mm-hmm. Because then all you have for, if they do that, then you give Starmer and Van der Leyen and all these people the fodder they need. Because right now, all they have is, today is the 1,000-day anniversary of the start of this war. This war is illegitimate. Putin is evil. It's the same talking point they've had for 1,000 days. They haven't been able to really upgrade that, that talking point. And everybody's like, yeah, no, we know you guys were intimately involved in this thing. That's now, in effect, common knowledge. So you need to get, you know, as far as we're concerned, Putin looks like the moderate here and you look like the warmonger and nothing has changed. So he's playing that calculus, that political calculus perfectly. He doesn't want to break that. Same thing with the Iranians, by the way, over Israel, right? Same thing with the Iranians. So this is not to say the Iranians' hands are clean or that the Russians' hands are clean.
Right.
They're not. At the level of strategic brinksmanship going on between states. These are the elements that matter. Your feelings don't fucking matter. Now, how you feel about this doesn't matter. They're important and you should feel them, but that's fine. But you don't bring that to the analysis.
Right.
Okay. Now we're looking at, this is all about firing solutions. And this is all about, you know, who's got what assets and all that stuff. It's all that, like that shit I used to talk about. Like I'm sitting at the shadow of this table going, I've got these cards, the way the land looks like this, he's got that, and that. I attack there.
It really is like that.
And if the other four people around the table groan when I attack with that card, that amount of power in my pool, these cards in my hand at that target, and the other four people at the table, I'll go, God damn you. I'm like,
sure.
Okay. I'm really good at this shit. Like I've trained myself for 20 years doing this crap. And by the way, I wasn't good at it at the beginning. It took me a long time to get good at this. So I don't begrudge anybody not having that skill set. Yeah. I bring this commentary to the table because I do have that skill set.
Yeah. No, you really do.
Probably. So strip out, like, don't think that I'm advocating here because I'm not.
No.
I want peace, folks. I'm like Trump. Like, I'm going to wave my hands a lot and I'm going to be crude and obnoxious. And at the end of the day, I want freaking peace. Everybody put their fucking weapons down and let's go have a pizza. You want beer? We're good. Can we get some gas flowing over there? Those people are cold. Like, come on.
Yeah.
Like, but so that's where that's part of the lay of the land here. So, we have a moment where we have this moment, we have to deal with the reality of the situation, which is, okay, will Putin go offside? Likely no. These people, now what else are these people trying to hide?
Yeah.
Andy, and this is the big one. Well, let's tie it back to the capital markets, because this is where it gets really
good. That's where I wanted to go.
And the good news is that I already did a dry run this morning for my podcast that I do for Newsmax. So here's the gig, because I looked at the capital markets as they were trading this morning in the wake of this attack, right? So again, we're doing this on Tuesday around noon Eastern time. Markets are going to open for a few hours. Oil's flat on the New York Open this morning, up 75 cents to a dollar. Would be fucking shit,
right?
What's down? Stocks, admittedly.
A little.
Not much. A couple hundred points on the Dow. It's still correction territory after a nice big bull run. Still really a retest of the breakout, to be honest with you, from 2 weeks ago when Trump won. What's down? Bond yields. U.S. bond yields. You set up a World War III scenario, money starts going to ground. It goes to the deepest, most liquid markets, safest markets in the world, the U.S. 10-year. Why?
I'll
tell you why. Because the U.S. 10-year was moving higher because bear steepener trade was in effect. People were like, okay, there's going to be recession, yada, yada, yada. I want more money. I want more yields from going out the yield curve. Perfectly rational. Who's getting fucked by this? Europe and the U.K. Why? Because bond spreads can't be, can't, they have to stay in a certain range. Like algorithmically, there's a lot of people out there who've got all these interest rate and currency swap arrangements that they can't allow those contracts to get outside the bounds, because that starts popping off margin calls left and right. And now all of a sudden, you know, people are getting cash calls to the tune of trillions of dollars.
Yeah.
I don't know who those people are, but I'm going to tell you this. Why is the, so what happened last week? The euro shit the bed. Okay. Yep. And the euro shit the bed while US bond market was selling off and Lagarde was trying to hold 2.4% on the German 10-year. What also happened at the same time, the pound shit the bed while the UK 10-year gilt was pushing above 4.5%. So clearly, it's not about just the spreads between US and German and US. You know, it's not just about the spreads. It's actually for them about a red line in the sand. UK 10-year gilts get above this level, margin calls. British, German bunds get above 2.4, 2.5%, margin calls. Especially when, so last week, the way you have to look at it this way, it was, you know, those red lines may have been a couple of basis points higher when the pound was at $1.30 and the euro was at $1.10. Now the euro's at $1.55 and the pound's at $1.26. Now those levels have got to come down. How do you get them to come down? You start a fucking war and let capital flow into the US Treasury market and then let the algorithms go crazy maintaining the credit spreads on their own. While you subtly push the markets where you need them to go here and there. Yep. I was watching Christine Lagarde literally yesterday while I was doing another podcast, intervening hard in the German 10-year. On the 50, I was watching the 15-minute chart live and I could see it. So we know we're that close to a sovereign debt crisis in Europe. But look, the German government is falling.
It just happened.
Okay. Yeah. The Keir Starmer could be thrown out of office on a, you know, road ridden out on a fucking railroad tie,
right,
for this, you know, the Southport debt. Like, this is sincere. You've got a massive farmers protest led by, of all people, Jeremy the Ape Clarkson.
Right.
A man who finally, you know, is like, I'm not a real farmer. I can't lead this thing. I'm like, no, Jeremy, you're exactly the guy who needs to lead this freaking thing. You know, get out there and fucking lead, dude. This is your moment.
Right.
To stop being the stop being an ape and be a leader of men and stand up for yourself. Good thing he's got an Irish wife or significant other, because that, you know, Lisa, if you've watched Carson's Farm, you know, Lisa was like reading them the riot act. No, Jeremy, get your ass on that fucking tractor and go to London. I can't do a good Irish accent or I wouldn't try. I'm hoping that that's what happened. But, you know, I've watched Clarkson's Farm enough to know that, you know, I know where's the pants in that family. And good, and good for her too, because like at this point, she's watching these fucking Englishmen destroy her home country.
Yeah.
So she's, you know, she's pissed.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they're all pissed.
So where's the Fed in all of this?
The Fed's like, the Fed's got it as good as the Fed has ever had it.
I think you're right.
I know I'm right. And you want to know why?
Yes.
Oh, no, I want to hear why you think I'm right. Actually, that would be really interesting. I'll shut the fuck up for a minute.
So you're going to have massive deregulation. So you don't have to really cut rates as much as you had in the past, right? So you can maintain a dollar strength by keeping rates marginally higher. Maybe you cut a little, but you don't have to race to zero like you did before, because you're going to have all of this deregulation, right?
I think you're half right. You're in the ball.
Okay. I'm in the ballpark.
You're in the ballpark. This is the way I see it.
Okay.
Powell's been screaming that he wants the Congress to get their fiscal house in order. Vivek and Elon alone might get that done, right? Because all they walk in with their, like, if you don't think they already know, you don't think they already know what $2 trillion are going to cut from the budget? I got news for you. They already know. Okay. They're not going to go, like, they already know. They already did the work. They've been doing, they've been sharpening those pencils for 4 years in preparation for this. Okay. Damn. So they already know. So cut $2 trillion in spending. That's nominally deflationary, right?
Right.
So what does the Fed have to do there? The Fed should lower rates a little bit.
Right? A little bit.
Not, I mean, you know, they don't need to go back to zero. No, that's what you said. But it gives, let's put it this way. The banks have taken a big punch in the mouth for the last 18 months.
Yes.
Punch in the mouth. But if you don't think that, you think that Powell didn't do what the banks wanted him to do, you're out of your fucking mind. That's who he works for. So the banks put the squeeze, said, we're going to take a punch in the mouth to squeeze them motherfuckers. Meaning the euro dollar markets.
That's what I was going to ask. Them, the euro.
Now, and that's what's happening, right? We're squeezing the euro. We're squeezing the gilt market. We're squeezing the bund. We're forcing U.S. treasuries under the balance sheets of, you know, all the European central banks in order to defend their currencies, blah, 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 blah. We're doing all of it. Notice how the dollar is up. Yeah. Bond yields are down. Mm-hmm. Right? And stocks are up. And gold is up, relatively speaking.
Relatively speaking, yes.
Yeah, we're still, I mean, yeah, gold is going to throw an inside bar this week and then, or possibly even a one bar reversal to the upside, depending on how this thing plays out.
I think you're right, but go ahead. This is fast.
All right. So now, and you know what I mean by an inside bar? It's one that doesn't break the previous high or low. So last week's low is going to hold, and then we're going to bounce and go higher.
I think now, you're right.
Now, Powell has, so what Powell did was, so the bank said to Powell, raise interest rates. We can handle it. The ones who can't handle it are going to scream, and we got to bring them under control. So we got to bring Beaufort to heel. We got to bring Bank of New York Mellon to heel. We got to bring Citigroup to heel. They got to start cleaning up their balance sheets. We're going to, you know, create some facilities to help them out. And you know, if you have to here and there, bail them out or whatever. And if they don't, we'll just buy them. Then we'll get rid of Citigroup. We'll get rid of those fucking people. We'll send them to Guantanamo and we'll handle all that to Jamie Dimon and we'll move on. Like, whatever. I don't give a fuck. Like at the money center bank level, do we really, I don't know that we need like 20 big bullion banks anymore, right? Or however many we have. Do we need that many? We need more community banks, yep. Right? So what did Powell do? He cut 50 basis points to signal to everybody that the credit system in the United States is in deeper trouble than we thought it was. Commercial real estate, you know, credit card debts, car loan delinquencies, all that stuff that Daniel DiMartino Booth does a wonderful job every day on her Twitter feed, telling the world about. Love Daniel. That's her focus. And, you know, God's bless her for it. But at the same time, the banks took the punch in the mouth. Now they need to get repaid. Yeah. Powell needs to cut enough to get back to something close to neutral so that they can start to lend. But we also need an upwardly sloping yield curve. So, yeah. Right? So that they can then lend properly.
So you can make money.
And then we can unfuck the mortgage market. Then we can unfuck the car loan market. Then we can start pricing risk properly again, yada, yada, yada. So I don't know how much Powell's going to cut, but I expected him. I said before the election, he would cut more under Trump if Trump was able to walk in with enough of a mandate to help fix the fiscal side of things.
Okay.
Powell keeps shrinking the balance sheet. He's going to cut rates and still shrinking the balance sheet, folks. All the COVID expansion is gone. Now we're into the Yellen years that he's getting rid of off the balance sheet. But he can now reissue that. If we need to issue new debt, we can do so at lower rates, helping Trump deal with the problem, to deal with the unfunded liabilities problem. Now we're no longer issuing debt to fund the budget. We're issuing debt to deal with, to shore up the financial balance sheet of the country by shoring up the unfunded liabilities, right? Metaphorically speaking. Now, you have that playing out. So I expect, like right now, the SOFR futures market is handicapping, hold on for a second, let me pull it up real quick, is handicapping a December 2025 cost of dollars at 3.84%. It hit a high of almost 4, like that Powell was only going to cut to 4 by the end of 2025. I don't think that's the case. I think it's going to be closer to 3. I think if Harris had won, he would have made good on his threat that he can still raise rates if he needs to, because inflation hasn't been tamed. So right. The commentators who are out there saying that Powell's chosen inflation are correct, but they're correct for the wrong reasons. He's not doing so because he's scared. He's doing so because he has credit problems that are massive, because we printed so much fucking money during COVID that you were never going to get rid of the inflation, all of that inflation in one business cycle. It was going to take two.
Right.
So it's got to be it's got to be one of these things, right? And so that's where we are, which means that he's going to cut rates. It's going to allow for a bit of a credit expansion, but we're going to get a normalized yield curve. We're going to still have trouble because people aren't, we're going to have trouble. There's no way around that. The labor market is going to be a mess. It's going to be very difficult to bring manufacturing back on shore. As Vince Longshi and I've been talking about this, it's really important that to realize how expensive it will be to get companies that went overseas to come back to the United States. You've got to give them, it wasn't Vince Longshi, it was Martin Armstrong talking about this. Vince has made a similar point, but I read it in read their comments in two separate places. It's like, you have to give them tax consistency in order to give them the incentive to be able to make 25, 30, 40 year commitments to the U.S. If we're doing this, we're socialists one day, we're free marketeers 4 years later, and then we go back and forth. We do this hem and haw like Davos wants. The money won't come back. So Trump has to revamp the tax code. He has to revamp the ways spending is dealt with. He has to change the way entitlements are going to be paid out as a function of tax flows going forward. It's doable. It's not going to be easy. Okay. Mm-hmm. But it's there. There are solutions to this problem. And everybody who says that there aren't solutions to this problem are selling you something. And I'm not selling you anything. I'm just telling you what I think.
Okay.
What's the theory?
Do you think he's going to eliminate the income tax then and just go off full on tariff?
I don't think he can eliminate the income tax, but by putting out the big Zopa idea, hey, let's get rid of the income tax and go back to, pre-1913.
Oh,
that's attractive. It's attractive, right? It's not just attractive, Andy. It's
crazy.
It's aspirational.
Yes.
Okay. What do they keep telling us? Don't look up. Don't look up. Look at your feet. Oh my God, there's an abyss right in front of you. Look at your feet. Don't look up. Don't dare to dream anything. Your future is a suicide pod after you've eaten enough bugs that it's killed you, after you've taken your 15th mRNA gene therapy shot and you were built of such hardy stock, it took 15 shots to kill you as opposed to two.
Yeah.
That's what these people think, they're trying to sell us that that's our birthright, that we don't deserve anything more than that as human beings. Fuck them. We can solve these problems. In this month's newsletter, I'm not trying to sell it, folks. I really am not. Literally, my final line of the draft newsletter of Article 1 is, look, if Elon Musk can fucking throw a rocket up into space and catch it, we can figure out how to fire the HR nannies and middle managers who think they fucking run the world.
Amen.
This isn't goddamn difficult. Okay? They're just gaslighting assholes.
Yeah.
We can do this. We have the technology.
Yeah.
We can become the $6 million country. You know what I mean? It's possible. It's not going to be easy, but if there's a will, there's a way. Now, do you have the will, or have you already given up because that sells better? I'm not selling you nothing. I'm selling you not just hope. I'm selling you the plan. That plan's going to suck.
Yeah.
And you're going to have to work really freaking hard. But we owe it to our freaking kids, man. We really do.
No, we really do. We owe it to ourselves. So where does gold come into all of this? Because gold's been so screaming. It did take some people say take a dump after the election, but I would say it was a correction, a healthy correction. But I didn't very firm.
So gold is really interesting, because aside from the fact that gold is going to get remonetized, I haven't even talked about the Chinese. I haven't even talked about the Chinese issuing U.S. dollar bonds.
Yeah.
To recapitalize their Asian trade partners. That's brilliant, by the way. But gold, if you look at the weekly chart of gold, just go investing.com, whatever. Just pick a, look at a weekly chart, look at the last three bars of gold. This week, nominally a little bit of an up bar, and then two down bars in front of that. The first down bar was clearly the correction after a major bull run. Like we ran from 2,300, 2,250 all the way up to 2,800. Of course there was going to be a correction, right? Yeah. Not a big deal. That was a corrected bar. Last week's bar felt different. Last week's bar was one of those, why did gold sell off another $100? Because there was like,
yes.
That's why the euro shit the bed. That's why the pound shit the bed. People were liquidating their gold positions to get access to dollars or whatever the hell they needed. And gold is always the first piggy bank they raid. Yeah. And then silver gets caught in the drive-by shooting because of the algorithms and the COMEX and the CRIMEX and the LBMA up during that time raised margin requirements 4 times, which is a standard play in order to try and get rid of the over-levered longs and force the price down a little bit and help people and whatnot. That's what that is. To see gold bounce this week, even before last night's attack, open $15 above the low from last week. Yeah. I mean, gold opened strong and it's been
real resources.
Yeah. So what we wind up with is a setup for a classic, what Martin Armstrong would call a false move down. That we had to get, the market was too bullish.
Yep.
And then it got too bearish very quickly. And really? I'm not saying that's what is going to happen. I'm saying that's the setup as of right now. We have only probabilities at this point. Wait for the weekly close. If we get a close above last week's high, we get a one bar reversal, off of the two bar downtrend, false move down immediately. If we don't get it, we still have the opportunity for the reversal signal next week. So then, they're going to fight tooth and claw to keep gold and silver both from throwing reversal signals on Friday. So somewhere around 2 o'clock, they're going to shut the computers off and they're going to try and bomb the market.
Yeah. Yeah.
If there's a major money center bank that is in trouble on that position in New York, at this point, the two big candidates are always BofA and Citi. At least that's the word on the street that I've heard.
Okay.
And Powell and company and everybody else to do that, to get out to limp along for another 2 weeks. You guys have to understand that it doesn't matter if you think it's fair or not. It doesn't matter if you want vengeance against Citigroup for suppressing the price of gold. It doesn't matter if you want vengeance against the Jews for what they've done to the Palestinians. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I mean, it matters that and it does you credit and gives you, and it speaks to your character that you want justice. But we don't live in that world. So, deal with the world you have, argue for the world you want, and then analyze what you've got in those terms, and then, look for the signs of whether it's getting better or worse, in the spread between those two things. That's all I do, Andy. Literally, that's all I do on a daily basis. And all the rest of it is just trying to figure out what tea leaves to read in order to make that assessment.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So let's go back to China and gold, if you would, and let's go longer to gold. What place does gold have in the new coming economy over the Trump years?
So we're going to have a very, very weird moment in time. And Martin Armstrong, bless him, honestly, for putting these ideas out there and try to explain to everybody how capital flow actually works. You can have your opinion about Socrates. I don't care. Martin's instincts on how capital flows are impeccable. in a moment like this with Trump, he's been screaming about this for years, that there was going to be a moment in time where gold, the dollar, U.S. treasuries, and stocks all go up at the same time.
Yeah.
Now, why? Well, that doesn't make any sense. Gold is the anti-dollar, and this is and the gold is the inverse of the three-year treasury note yield, real yield. No, you're missing the big picture. All those relationships only matter when the rules were set, when these were the rules. Move the rules over here, and it's a different world. And now all the relationships change. The boundary conditions of the problem have changed. The underlying assumptions of the problem have changed. Our trust in our leadership and the capital market and the people who run the world has changed. Therefore, your assumptions about what capital is going to do also has to change. You can't sit there and think in terms of one sigma moves. You have to start thinking about in three sigma, four sigma moves. You have to think about correlations across asset classes that may not last very long. They only last for 18 months or 2 years or 3 years. And they may go right back to where they were before, but you're going to miss the important life-changing event, which is possibly life-changing money, if you are so willing to bet on these things, you're going to miss it. And frankly, you're going to not serve your customers very well. And, you know, I don't lay that out there as a challenge, but more as a thing. Like, I worry about these things every day. I'm out here, you know, I'm out there with my ass out, hanging out over a freaking cliff every day doing this shit. I get it. And I know everybody else is doing the same thing, but it's why I'm so fiercely willing to engage as a contrarian in ideas that are not popular. I do so naturally. And then I try to explore them as best as possible, because what I'm always searching for is that way to serve my customers just a little bit more, because I'm deathly afraid of being in the fucking gutter, because I've been in a gutter a couple of times and it sucks. And I never want to go back there. So, and we've all been in the gutter in our lives, right? And so remind yourself of that moment and then think about that. So, you know, whenever I feel myself getting complacent, I'm like, oh, no, time for an idea that's going to piss a lot of people off. Like, you know what I mean? It's a reflexive thing. But so what's important, why those four asset classes? Then you're going to lump Bitcoin in with gold because it's a better asset.
So I think I know what you're going to say, but I want you to say, I'm agree.
Okay. So they're going to, because it's really just a very simple idea. Money's going to go to safe haven tangible assets. It's not hard. These are safe haven assets. Okay, until we've gotten to a point where we have restored trust in the political leadership, financial leadership, and everything else, until that trust has been regained, and it will be regained when people put their money down in such a way, on the table in such a way, that those asset classes can return to their traditional relationships. Mm-hmm. They're all going to move in lockstep with each other. Trump is setting up the biggest influx of capital into the United States since the early 1920s, when the sovereign debt crisis of Europe created the Roaring Twenties. Schwartz and Friedman were fucking wrong. Bernanke was wrong. The monetarists were wrong. And the Austrians were right. And Martin Armstrong was right. It's all about capital form.
Yeah.
So what are your five safe haven assets across every actor in this market? You may be a gold bug and love gold. You may be a fucking Bitcoin maxi and love Bitcoin. What if you're a fund manager? What if you're a pension fund manager? What do you love?
Bonds.
Bingo. Bingo.
Yep.
What if you're a hedge fund? What do you love?
Stock.
And what if, and what's, and if you're a, and if you're, and if all of those things are trending higher, not necessarily in price, but in yield, like you're going to see yields go up. You're going to demand higher yields off the 10-year, but it's going to be happening with a stronger dollar. So you're going to get paid on both sides of the trade. You're going to get, you're getting the Texas hedge.
Yeah.
You're getting higher long end yields and a stronger underlying currency.
Exactly. You have to go to dollars to do this.
I can freeze.
And I believe that, but I never said it or thought it quite like, but I would.
And it's money flow. That's exactly.
It's all money flow.
Yeah.
And what the Europeans have been setting up for us is exactly the opposite. Political instability, overpriced debt, an underpriced dollar, underpriced gold, no collateral, blah, 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 all of this stuff. And political, cultural uncertainty to freeze capital in Europe so that it doesn't leave.
Mm-hmm.
And they were hoping that they could set the United States on a war path to fight a three-front war in Israel, Ukraine, and Taiwan, mm-hmm. to finally bankrupt the country, force China to spend money on shit that it doesn't want, fighting a war with the U.S. Maybe the U.S. like sets off some freaking nukes and destroys parts of the Chinese economy, and guess who gets to pick up the pieces after they defaulted on, what, $27 trillion worth of debt? The fucking Trotskyites in Europe.
Yeah.
That's their game. That's their big win. That's their revenge.
Mm-hmm. And then Trump got elected.
And then, no. And then crooks missed.
Yes. Right. So
you have to ask yourself, if you're, are there any atheists in a fucking foxhole in this financial war? And I'm looking in the fucking mirror here, dude. I'm looking at you. I'm looking at me. This is a mirror. Right. I stare into this microphone with the Zoom window open. I can see myself. I'm like, looking into a mirror when I say all this shit. Like, it's.
I want to end on this.
Do you think this will be derailed in the next 6 weeks, 8 weeks?
They're certainly going to try.
I'm going to try.
And the thing
like
is,
last night, today,
like last night,
yeah,
they're still counting votes in the swing states. Like they're still refusing to accept Pennsylvania. Like they're still, like Mitch McConnell going out there. There will be no recess appointments. Oh, shut the fuck up, Edgy.
Yes, right.
Oh, and we're not even going to waterboard you, dude. We're just going to push you down the stairs.
Yeah, right. You should. I should.
Down to.
No, we shouldn't say things like that. Metaphorically speaking. Metaphorically, we paid a large Mexican $50 to, you know.
Yeah.
Metaphorically speaking. I hate Doonesbury. I always hated Doonesbury because I couldn't stand the leftist bullshit. But Duke and Honey were awesome because they were just so ridiculous. And there's that wonderful moment late in Doonesbury's run where Honey finally, you know, puts Duke in rehab. He like passes out and he goes on a binge and he passes out and he wakes up in a bed in rehab. And it's a Sunday cartoon. So it's like eight panels of Honey saying, I did this because I love you. And all of this stuff. And it goes on and on and on and on and on. And the final panel is Duke sitting there in bed. And he goes, I've paid a large Mexican $50 to kill you. It's hilarious. And it's like one of the best comics of all time. And I'm like, all right, yeah. you get that one, dude. I've you know, so that's been part of my lexicon forever. I'm like, I've paid a large Mexican $50 to destroy you. So.
So they're gonna try. Do you think what else can they pull?
I don't know.
World War III.
I don't handicap these people at this point. I mean, I really don't. They tried pulling all their money out of the bond market on election night. That didn't work. They're trying to shore up the bond markets today. They're trying to start World War III, I think those were Storm Shadow missiles, not attack-ems. Mm-hmm. But again, I may be wrong about that. This is the hot take as of today. We may find out something different tomorrow, but it would be self-consistent with my thesis. If you think I'm schizo posting, well, then you think I'm, you know, then don't listen to me. But if you think and you know, any of the words that came out of my mouth today, among the many, were worth the shit, well, then, you know, those were probably British storm shadows. Apparently they carry the exact same size warhead as the Attackhams. So,
God, isn't it? Yeah. Put it together.
You don't call it Perfidious Albion for nothing.
Right.
The Irish don't have a proverb that says if two Irishmen are fighting today, it's because an Englishman visited both of them yesterday for nothing. Divide and rule is the oldest narcissistic trick in the book. Y'all have one in your family somewhere. Think about it. Think about that cousin or that spouse or parent or sibling or whatever that always seems to like set everybody against each other, or your friend, you know, your high school.
Like, you know, you all know these people.
Guess what?
They never left high school.
Right.
Same people. And they were all psychologically profiled and chosen to be in the positions that they're in today, to do the exact things that they're doing today. That's why there's a big Gantt chart at Evil. I can tell you there's a big Gantt chart at Evil Corp Central. Because they know the people that they put in place. They know the things that will make the strings to pull to get them to move to do the things they want them to do.
Yeah.
I'm not saying the team that Trump has in front of him or around him is a team without strings. They have different strings.
Yeah.
And maybe fewer strings, and hopefully fewer strings.
Yeah.
That's the best we can hope for. And I think that's something we should hope for.
That's something we should. And that's also during that you can think of it however way you want, that they've been put in those roles for a reason. I just think of Rubio's in that role for a reason.
Yeah. Rubio's in that role for a reason. Trump has this ring fenced for the most part. And the fact that they're trying to light off World War III is telling you that they know Trump has this ring fence.
Yeah.
That's the way you read this. That's the read. Yeah. That's the tell. You know, everybody at the poker table is bluffing, and everybody has a tell, and the British have a tell. And that tell is to start shit when they're in trouble. So watch why they're in trouble, and then watch where you see another, you know, something flares up out of nowhere, and you're like, how did that happen? Oh, right.
Right.
Those people again.
Yeah. Well, Tom, God, I love talking to you, man.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
It was fun.
I do have to run. I have another rip with Marty Bennett at 4:00, and I've got work to do between now and then. So let's wrap it up here. We'll do it again in 6 or 8 weeks or whatever, and we'll go from there.
Absolutely. Tom, go Dan's. I'll put in all the show notes. God bless you, my friend.
And, you know, we don't do this again between now and the end of the year. Happy Thanksgiving. And Merry fucking Christmas.
I'm glad you, man. Take care, man.